And I believe that we, as a group, we spend all of our resources trying to find that satisfaction. I also think it's pretty obvious and not controversial at all that the treasure we're looking for and that we end up investing in doesn't fully satisfy us. Or at least it doesn't satisfy us for long enough. Eventually, it wears off. And so our search, our hunt for real and lasting satisfaction, what I'm calling treasure, that search continues throughout our lives. I think almost anybody who's honest would be able to admit this. What is kind of controversial is the claim that the Apostle Paul made last week that we took a look at together for just a couple of moments in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. And here's the controversial claim that you may not be 100% on board with today, and I get it, I understand, and hopefully we'll be able to talk a little bit more about it. Here's the controversial claim, that the only treasure that can truly satisfy your deepest longings as a human being, the only thing that can really fill you up to being satisfied is Jesus himself. Now, that's controversial, okay, because it just seems a little bit unreal, and I can identify with that. I mean, if you're sitting there thinking, okay, how can a guy who's been dead for 2,000 plus years now, how can that person satisfy my deepest cravings as a person? I mean, I've searched after riches and fame and exotic vacations, and those can't satisfy me. So how in the world can Jesus do what they can't do? I'm chasing after a busy career. I'm eager for some kind of a whirlwind romance that's going to satisfy me. But if those things can't satisfy me, how can Jesus? A little bit more extreme. If crystal meth and Budweiser can't satisfy my deepest cravings, how can this guy who lived and died 2,000 plus years ago, how can he be that satisfaction? Now, if you're there and you have some of those questions, or at least maybe you don't want to admit it out loud, but if you had those thoughts running through your head, I can understand a little bit your doubts and your skepticism. Because the truth is, every single one of us in here, myself included, we've all hunted for treasures and invested a lot of time, energy, and money into treasures that weren't able to deliver what they promised they would give to us. But what I want to suggest to you this morning, and what I want you to at least try to think about, is the possibility that Jesus is different from those things. And what I want you to do this morning is to hear his claims for yourself. And in the end, this is the reality, it's actually very freeing when you stand up here. This is kind of an intimidating thing to do. I just want you to know that. Not that you guys are a tough crowd or anything, but it is intimidating to stand up here and to realize I need to try to say something, A, that you're going to listen to, and B, that might actually challenge the way you see life and to try to get you to see life slightly differently. But here's what comforts me as I do this job that's somewhat intimidating. What comforts me is that in the end, every single person in here is going to have to make their own decision about whether or not they believe what God says, what I have to say, or not. And you have to decide if you're going to give Jesus a try or not. But you know what? I figure you came all this way. You're here. You look really nice. Let's go ahead and at least hear what Jesus has to say for himself. And let's make the decision for ourselves. So what I'm going to do this morning is finish my sermon from last week. And I'm going to share with you four different claims that Jesus made. Four claims that he made that directly relate to your deepest human longings. In other words, Jesus said at various points in his life and his ministry that he was able to satisfy four core human cravings and desires. And you're going to have to wrestle with and see if you can agree with this and understand it. Now, we're going to have to skip around a little bit today through the Bible to catch all of the big picture. But if you'll stick with me, I promise it'll be worth the effort. And we start our journey here in Matthew chapter 11, right? You're already open up there on page 816. I want to read to you three verses that unfortunately are at the end of a longer conversation that Jesus had with people that he was interacting with. Someday, we're going to come back and hit the entire section and give you a sense about what's going on. But here today, I just want to focus in on the claim Jesus makes starting in verse 28. You ready for this? Matthew 11:28, Jesus says this to the people in his day, and I think he says it to each one of us in this room. He says, verse 28, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find," what? "Rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." So what's the first claim? What's the first basic human longing that Jesus claims to be able to satisfy? Number one, if you're following along in your notes, if that's what you like to do, fill in this blank. Jesus claims, "I can give you rest. I can give you rest." Our culture is pretty desperate for rest, isn't it? We push ourselves pretty hard. We're more stressed out than we've ever been because of the pace of our own lives. We're all convinced, and I think largely advertising and social media is to blame for this, but we are all convinced that we're being left out of some great experience that everybody else is experiencing. And so what do? We run around like chickens with our heads cut off, trying desperately to experience everything we possibly can until literally we fall over exhausted from the attempt. We go to the baseball field. That's my life over the last couple months. I've got some little leaguers and senior leaguers, and I'm going to the baseball field. Sometimes we go to the concerts, we go to the bar, we go to the mall, we go to the internet, we go to some vacation paradise, all looking for one pretty simple concept, and that is rest. The ironic thing, right, is that as a culture, as a society, we have more leisure time than any generation that went on before us, and yet we seem to have less peace and less rest, and probably the medical professionals in the room could stand up and bear witness that we are struggling to keep up. Our bodies and our hearts and our spirits are worn out. In our world today, the worst sin is to be bored. So instead, we push and we push until we're worn out and sometimes strung out from the effort. And to everybody who's trapped in this desperate craving for rest, Jesus makes what I consider to be a simple and yet controversial claim. If you come to me, I can give you rest. Think about that. Just being able to sit back and relax a little bit. To close your eyes and just take a nap, because everything's going to be okay when you wake up. Your life, Jesus says, doesn't have to depend on you being on all the time, keeping all the plates spinning and all the balls in the air. I mean, wouldn't that be an amazing thing if that were true? Wouldn't it be amazing to be able to just rest and know that you are safe, that you're provided for, that you're taken care of? That you can for once take your hands off the wheel of your life and the car won't immediately crash off the side of the road? That's actually what Jesus claims to be able to offer people. Now, you'll notice, and if you're paying attention and you're all very intelligent, I can tell, you've noticed though, there is a condition to this. Did you see verse 29? Look what he says in verse 29. He says, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart." And then he says, "You will find" what? "Rest for your soul." So there are some conditions to this. The condition is you've got to surrender control to Jesus, and you've got to be okay with taking his yoke upon you. In other words, he gets to call the shots. You have to let Jesus be in charge. And he says along the way, you've got to learn from me. You've got to be willing to learn how to live your life a different way. Jesus isn't going to come into your life as you're frantically searching for some kind of satisfaction, some kind of rest, some kind of peace. He's not going to come alongside and help you destroy yourself looking for rest. He's going to come to you while you're exhausted and tired and say, "Are you sick of that yet? Are you sick of that approach? I've got a new approach to life. It's a better approach to life. And it's something that you're going to have to experience by surrendering control over every little moment of your life. You're going to actually have to let me be in charge for once. But if you'll let me be in charge, if you'll agree to start learning from me how to live life differently, I'm going to make you a promise right now, Jesus says. At the end of the day, when you put your head on your pillow, you'll be able to rest. And not just your physical body. Oh, we all, like, usually when you say, ask somebody how they're doing, what's the first thing that people usually feel like they need to say? I'm tired, right? We're all tired. I get it. Life is busy. Life wears on your spirit. But wouldn't it be amazing to be able to come to Jesus Christ and not just get physical rest for your body, but to get the rest of your soul on the inside? And the only reason, right, that you're able to rest internally is because you know that somebody else, someone who is powerful enough and someone who is good, is able to take care of you. And he's going to do what's best for you. He's going to be watching out for you. That as soon as you let your hands go off the wheel of your life, he is going to steadily put his hands on and make sure everything goes the way they're supposed to go. Now, Jesus was not saying something brand new. God had already been talking to his people about the fact he could give them rest. Take a look at this verse from Psalm 103, going all the way back into the Old Testament. The psalmist, I think it's David, King David, says this: as a father shows compassion to his children, so the Lord shows compassion to those who fear him. Well, what does that mean? Maybe you didn't have a great relationship with your father. Maybe your father wasn't a very compassionate person. So what does that mean that a father, I'm going to love you and show compassion like a father does? The next verse explains. He knows our frame. He remembers that we are dust. What does that mean? It means that he's not going to crush you with too high of an expectation. He knows what you can handle. He knows your limitations, and he's not going to push you into the red line. He wants to give you things that fit what you can handle. And this is really good news for those of us, because in our world, we face horrifying temptations that seem to be overwhelming. But even then, Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 10, he says this: no temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability, but with the temptation, he will also provide what? The way of escape, so that you may be able to endure it. What does that mean? It means God is not eager to push you and let life overpower you. If you feel overwhelmed and overpowered in your life, that is not the way God designed it to be. And when you surrender control of your life to him, you learn a new way of living from him, and you say, God, how you want my life to be is how it's going to be. All of a sudden, you start to discover that you are able to rest. Jesus claims to know what you need in order to experience real rest for your body and for your soul. And what I want to suggest for you and challenge you to think about this morning is that if you're willing to let go of control over your life, and that phrase, come to Jesus, he claims that he can satisfy that basic human craving for rest. So that's one thing. That's one thing that Jesus claims to be the satisfaction of your craving for rest. But there's more. There's more. Here's a second one. I'm going to give you the blank, and then we'll take a look at the passage. Jesus claims, number two, not only can I give you rest, that's number one, but number two, he claims, I can give you life. I can give you life. Now, this is maybe one of the more well-known ones, at least inside of church world, okay? Here's the verse. You probably may have heard it before. Jesus is talking in John 10, and he says this: the thief comes only to what? Steal, right? Duh, thief, steal, right? And kill and destroy. Jesus says, I came that they may have, fill it in blank, life, but not just have life, right? Have life abundantly. In other words, Jesus claims he can give you the kind of experience of life that you crave to experience. Now, our culture is desperate for life, isn't it? And I see this pop up in two different ways. Number one, it's obvious that we're desperate for life because of how much we fear death, how much we shrink away from it, how much we run from it, how much we just flat out ignore it for as long as we possibly can. I mean, that's why we don't save money. That's why we don't prepare our will. That's why we don't think about our legacy. That's why we don't prepare for the inevitable things that are coming, because we don't want to think about death. We're going to run the opposite direction. Some people are completely driven to avoid death as long as possible. They're trying to keep their bodies in healthy as long as they can because we're terrified of dying. So that's one way I know that we're eager for death, or excuse me, eager for life. Makes a little difference there. Second reason that I think that is because everybody, as you interact with people, they want the sensation of being alive. I heard it in a song, a secular song I heard on the radio the other day, talking about, I just want to feel alive, to experience passion, vitality, and purpose. So what do? What do people do? We seek out the thrills, the excitement, the fun. Why? Because we just want to feel the rush of life inside of us. We want to know we're alive. There's this one song, and at the end, it's a live performance, and the singer goes, "Are you alive?" And the crowd goes, "Yeah." "How does it feel to be alive?" And they're like, "Ah." You know, they're going crazy. They're seeking in music an experience of life that they can take with them and satisfy their needs in life. Problem is, and you can have these experiences. I guarantee you there's anyone, any one of us in here can go out and for the right amount of money, you can experience a rush of the sensation of being alive. We have those things available to us in 21st century America. The problem is these experiences of life fade. And ironically, the sensations that we seek out usually involve risk and danger to our life. We almost feel more alive when we're this close to dying. And that can steal or rob our lives. We chase after habits that make us feel good, even though we know they are taking years off the end of our life. We know it, and we don't care, because we want to feel alive, even if it's just for a moment. But here's the thing, right? No matter what you do, you can't out-health or outrun death. As you age, the inevitability of your death becomes more and more real. It happens to me almost every time I look in the mirror and wonder, who is this person? I remember a much younger version. And here I am at about the midpoint of my life, and I'm starting to realize the end is probably just about as close as my beginning is. That changes the way you look at things. We don't really want to think about it much in our culture, but it's real. It's true. So into that, Jesus steps, right? And he claims to be able to give life. I came that they might have life. And just to make sure we understand, he doesn't just mean survival. He says, and have life abundantly. He's not a thief. He says, I didn't come to take something from you. I didn't come to steal something from you, which is, again, the dominant perception of what people think. If they believe that God is real, so many people think that God is here to get something from me. God is here to take my worship. He's here to take my service. He's here to take away all my fun. And what Jesus does is flip that on its head and say, no. I'm not a thief. I'm not coming to steal anything from you. I'm coming to give you something. I want to give you an experience of life that is full, that is vibrant, that is meaningful. And you go, yeah, nice little religious sounding thing. But what do you really, really mean? How do you pull that off, Jesus? And I find it fascinating that we have this verse here. Take a look at John chapter 7. I got up on the screen here. Jesus, by the way, was at a big feast. And he says this at the big last day of the feast, the great day, Jesus stood up and cried out, "If anyone thirsts." Wow. That's like all of us, right? "If anyone thirsts, let him," and there's our phrase again. What does he say? "Come to me and drink." And then he says this, "Whoever believes in me, as the scripture has said, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water." Now, this he said about the Spirit, whom those who believed in him were to receive, for as yet the Spirit had not been given because Jesus was not yet glorified. Can I make a suggestion? Let's go back here. Jesus says, if anybody's thirsty, come to me and drink. Now, this is what life offers you. If you go outside and you go find somebody who can give you an experience of feeling alive, it's the equivalent of them handing you a really nice glass of a tall glass of cold water. You drink that cold water, and what do you feel? You feel good. You feel satisfied. You feel, depending on how hot it is outside, right? Have you ever had that experience? You're outside, you're mowing the grass, or you're playing with your kids, you come back inside, and that gulp of water, it's an amazing feeling, right? To feel satisfied of your thirst. Now, here's the problem, though. That glass of water cannot satisfy me for very long, can it? It satisfies me for a while, and I'm grateful for it, but eventually I'm going to have to drink some more water. So what Jesus is saying, he's saying, if you're thirsty, come to me and drink. But he says, don't worry, I'm not handing out cups of water. I'm not here to give you a little bit to last you until tomorrow when you're going to need some more. He has actually got a different plan, and this is a great, great plan. The plan is that out of your heart will flow rivers of water. So in other words, instead of somebody satisfying me every day from the, I need a new hit, I need a new high, I need a new experience, I need a new relationship, I need something to satisfy this thirst for life. Jesus is like, no, you don't get it. I'm going to put something inside of you that bubbles up and generates enough water, you'll be able to be satisfied forever. Now, I like walking out in nature and stuff like that. You come across any size river, I guarantee you, if you're really thirsty, you won't drink that river dry. Now, all of us together, that's a different story, but one person, no. And so what God does, do you know how he's going to satisfy your thirst for life? He's going to satisfy your thirst for life by putting someone inside of you who constantly replenishes your need for life. Because every single day you're going to wake up and you're going to need more life. You're going to need more of an experience of abundant life. And the truth is, you can't go looking out there to keep finding it because it's not going to work. You're going to run out of money. You're going to run out of health. You're going to run out of time. But it's not going to work. And so Jesus is like, I got a solution. Here's the solution. I'm going to put someone inside of you that every time you start to get thirsty, he's going to bubble up some more water to satisfy you in the moment. And who is that person? Jesus makes it clear, John makes it clear, that person is the Spirit of God. God doesn't just send somebody to do this. He comes himself and he lives inside of us and he says, I will satisfy you. You don't have to keep looking for another hit, another high, because you have new life inside of you every day. Paul was one of the early leaders of the church, and he had a hard life, okay? He had struggles. He had battles. He had times where he felt like it wasn't even worth living anymore. And he made this statement, which I think is remarkable, but shows the reality of what I'm talking about here. Paul says this, so we do not lose heart. In other words, I would be tempted to give up because of how hard my life is. But then he says this, though our outer self is wasting away, our what? Inner self is being renewed day by day. How can that happen? I'll know. I'll tell you how. The Spirit of God who lives inside of you keeps generating more life. A little bit more life. I need a little bit more, God. I'm really hurting. Somebody just hurt my feelings, God. I just lost my job, God. I'm struggling with this feeling, God. I feel like everybody's against me, God. And every day, a little bit more. Every day, a little bit more. Every need, a little more satisfaction. Every thirst that comes up, a little bit more water, living water. Our inner self is renewed every day. If you come to Jesus, Jesus claims. And you got to decide if you believe it or not. That's up to you. But Jesus claims that if you come to him, then God's Spirit will renew you every single day inside for a lifetime of satisfaction. Sure, your outer self may be wasting away. Things may not look great on the outside, but on the inside, he's going to satisfy that thirst you have for life. So friends, that's why I think Jesus is the treasure worth hunting for. He's worth seeking because the life that he gives is going to last. And not just for the lifetime on earth. Amazing thing is that it lasts on into eternity. And when your life finally ends here, your life will not end. But it'll continue on forever. So, he claims he can give rest. That's kind of a big deal. He claims he can give life. That's kind of a big deal as well. The third one I want to suggest to you is he claims this. Follow along your blanks if you want. I can give you wisdom. Wisdom. Now, that doesn't sound like that big of a deal until you really think about it. Because not only is our culture desperate for rest, not only are we desperate for life, but we're desperate to know what to do, aren't we? Finish this phrase for me. I guarantee you know it. Knowledge is power, right? And so what we've done in our society is we've created a system where we force, and kids are like, yeah, amen. We force our children to structure their lives around the acquisition of knowledge at school, all the way from the time they're sometimes 3-4 years old up through college. And if you go to grad school and you want to really punish yourself, you go further, right? And we structure our society around the thirst for knowledge, the thirst for education. Some of you are in the teeth of all of that right now, or have just emerged from the teeth of it, so you understand what I'm talking about. We've arranged that. Why? Because we believe that if we just study enough, we just listen to enough experts, if we just do our homework, we will always know what to do in our lives. And so we read books, billions of dollars of books every year. We'll go on YouTube and watch videos on how to repair this and how to fix that. We go to seminars. We go to school. We pay thousands of dollars for advanced education. Why? Because we want to know what to do. People can tell me what to do. We all get in tough spots and we want to have wisdom. We want to know what to do. The problem, right? This is like super obvious and you're like, I can't believe they pay you to do this. And I agree. Our knowledge is incomplete no matter how many experts we call. I can read 14 books on parenting, and when my child is screaming at 2 o'clock in the morning, I gotta figure it out. And they're not gonna come to my house and hold my child or make my child cry or whatever their philosophy is. I gotta figure it out. And in that moment, I am aware of the fact that no expert out there can tell me what to do in every situation. And here's another crazy thing. Sometimes you follow all the rules in the books and it still doesn't work out. Now, it's possible that I just didn't do it right, but I think there's been times in my life where I did what the expert told me to do and I didn't get the magical solution that I was hoping for. Because knowledge is not enough. We have more information and data than ever before. Most of you in here could hold up a device that has access to all the knowledge in the world. If you know how to look, which some of us are still trying to figure that out. But if you know how to look, you can find out the answer to almost any question. And yet we still don't know what to do. When somebody's in a conflict, we don't know how to respond. When our kids are getting in trouble at school, we don't know what to do. When our spouse won't talk to us anymore, we don't know how to respond. We all struggle to know what to do because we lack what the Bible would call wisdom. Wisdom is taking information and knowing what to do with it. It's one thing to go on YouTube and study how to fix something, and it's another thing to get that information, turn it into actual fixing of the thing. That's why I have Paul Aldrich in my life, because he can do that better than I can. Well, I want to suggest something to you. Jesus claims to be able to satisfy this basic human craving as well. Look at this verse. I'm going to show it to you up on the screen one more time. Colossians chapter 2, verse 3. He's talking about Jesus, okay, in the context. He says this, in whom, in Jesus, are hidden all the what? There's our word. This one totally caught my attention when I was studying through this. In whom are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. Now, what does that mean? What does that say? Well, at the very least, it means Jesus always knows what to do. Jesus is not surprised. Jesus is not shocked. Jesus is not confused. Like, what? How do I? Jesus knows what's going on. Inside of Jesus are hidden all the treasures, all the satisfaction you could need of wisdom and knowledge. So what Jesus suggests and what Paul is suggesting, you get Jesus, you come to Jesus, you invite Jesus in. What do you get when you get Jesus? You get all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge comes with him. When you get Jesus, you get everything he is. And that includes wisdom, and I would suggest this, guidance to know what to do. Now, some of you are going to be worried about this, but just stay with me. Look at this verse here. Paul's talking again. He says this. He says, all those who are led by the Spirit of God, remember that's the one who lives inside of us to renew the life every day, all of those of us who are led by the Spirit of God are sons of God. In other words, for God's children, His Spirit leads us. His Spirit guides us. His Spirit advises us. Can you believe having someone who lives inside of you that has access to your mind sharing with you insights of what to do and how to respond to specific situations? That's what Jesus claims. Not only does His Spirit fill us up with life every day, but His Spirit is available to give you guidance when you're in a tough spot. You don't know what to do. In those moments that you don't know what to do, you are not left on your own. Figure it out. Sorry. Good luck, buddy. You have all kinds of resources. You have His Word, which is incredibly full of wisdom and knowledge. But you have Jesus Himself. And Jesus doesn't always need a Bible verse to give you the wisdom to know how to respond in a particular situation. So what the idea is this. If you come to Jesus just as you are and say, Jesus, I need you, because when I have you, I have the wisdom or the treasures of wisdom and knowledge, then what ends up happening is that the Spirit, who's already pouring life into you every day, then starts to guide you. But He doesn't just do it magically. And what I mean by that is He doesn't always magically show up in the moment and tell you exactly what to do so you have no choice in the matter and no faith is required. But what He does is He starts to shape the way you think. And as God shapes the way you think, you find yourself making smarter choices, because they line up with how God made the world to work right. And as you think differently and you make better choices, you learn to see life right side up from God's perspective. I feel like I've heard that somewhere before. So if you need wisdom today, if there's something that you're just like, I don't have a clue. I don't know how to handle this. I don't know what I'm supposed to do here. I don't know what the right choice is. My suggestion to you is Jesus claimed to be able to help you with that. He claimed to be able to offer you all the wisdom you need in order to be the person He wants you to be. He is the treasure that can satisfy your need for wisdom. One last thing. And this is something we've sung a lot about, so you're probably already prepared for this. But this is the one probably that hits closest to home. Jesus claims, number four, not only can I give you rest, right? That's number one. Not only can I give you what? What's number two? Life. Not only can I give you wisdom, but lastly, and this may be the core one, this may be the most important, Jesus says, I can give you love. I can give you love. You want to talk about our culture? Our culture is pretty desperate for love, isn't it? You may be able to find a couple of songs here and there that don't talk about love, but almost all the music we listen to, the movies and television shows that we talk about, that we watch, have some kind of a portrayal of somebody desperately searching to find love. Think about the times when you feel the most sad, sick, and depressed in your life. Aren't they the times when you lose love? When somebody withholds love from you? When you're searching for it and can't find it anywhere? I mean, think about this. Look around at the relationships that maybe you are a part of or that you know people are a part of. We are willing to endure horrifying, dysfunctional, even abusive relationships with other people just for the small, slim chance that we might get a little love out of it. We're willing to endure so much pain just so we can get a little bit of love. And then a lot of us that never felt like we had that unconditionally growing up, how much of our lives do we spend stressed out trying to prove to the world that we deserve love? Again, I know we don't talk about this way because it's threatening, it's a little bit vulnerable. But our desire for love is what I would almost call a bottomless pit of desire. And we can't find a solution. Even those of us that are blessed to get married, and we have a wife or a husband who really tries hard to love us well, we get to that situation and we realize, wow, even they can't fill every need. Even they can't be there for me. Even they don't fully understand. And into this bottomless pit of a desire for love, Jesus steps in with the offer to give us, not to sell us, not to trade it in exchange for other goods. He offers to give us all the love we could ever possibly need or want. He says, I can give you love. Romans talks about it this way. This will blow your mind. For while we were still weak, at the right time, Jesus Christ died for all the people who were worthy of his love. Right? No. It says he died for the ungodly. Verse 7 says this, for one will scarcely die for a righteous person, though perhaps for a good person, one would dare even to die. But God shows his love for us in that while we were still what? Sinners, Christ died for us. In other words, God's love for us is unconditional. Like it starts when you're at your worst point. Like the part where you want to hide under your covers and not ever see another person. He loved you there. And he loves you there. He gave his most precious son for you in your very worst moment. Not when you cleaned up your act for him. It's when you were at your most broken. He looked at you and loved you then. This love is unconditional. It doesn't depend on your good behavior. And then I love this. It's from the same book a little bit further on. Paul says, I'm sure that neither death nor life, that kind of covers it, right? Nor angels, nor rulers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth. And just in case he missed something, he goes, anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from what? The love of God in who? In Christ Jesus our Lord. God's love for us is unstoppable. It's eternal. There is no obstacle that can be built high enough to keep God away from you. You can't put an obstacle high enough to make God stop loving you. You can't decide to live such a horrible life that even God gives up on me. Impossible. Nothing can separate you from his love. Now, I don't know, but I think that's what the people on the radio are singing about. I think that's what the people who are making the movies are trying to convince us is found somewhere else. And what Jesus says is, no, 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 no. Yes, you can get a little small picture of my love for you through those things, and that's beautiful and wonderful. But the love you really need is a love you always have had. And all you got to do is realize that I have this for you. And then one last passage. I want you to see it in your actual Bible text there. Open up to the book of Ephesians chapter 3. I got to show you this because this wraps it all up for me, at least, in a way that makes a lot of sense. Ephesians chapter 3, please. As soon as I get there, I guess. Ephesians chapter 3, it's on page 977 if you want to just jump right there. Paul prays for his friends in a town called Ephesus. They're called the Ephesians. That's why the letter is called that. And he has a prayer for them, and it revolves around the human craving and need for love. Verse 14 says this, Ephesians 3:14 on page 977. Paul says, for this reason I bow my knees before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth is named, that according to the riches of his glory, he may grant you to be strengthened. Don't you need strength? With power through his Spirit. There's the Spirit again showing up everywhere we need something. He's there. Through his Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. That you, being rooted and grounded in love, may have strength to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and length and height and depth, and to know what? The love of Christ that surpasses knowledge. Here's what Paul knew about the people in Ephesus, and here's what I know about you. And it's mostly because I know it about myself. You're not sure people love you. You're not sure. Sure, there's some people that maybe you feel confident in, but when you walk into a new environment, the question is always, are these people safe? Do these people care? Are these people that love me? Can I trust what's about to happen here? And so what do? We hold ourselves back from people. We put on our smile and fake face, and we try to win over your love, but we don't already feel comfortable and confident that we have it. We just don't. And Paul understands that when we relate to God, we say, yes, God is a God of love. But when it comes down to the real nitty-gritty stuff, what we're not 100% convinced of is that he really loves us. Yes, he loves humanity. But does he love Toby? Does he love Mike? Does he love Harry? Does he love Jane? That's what you wonder in the quiet places of your heart when you're afraid to say it out loud. And what Paul says is, what I want for you so much, what I want from you is to understand how much Jesus loves you. To believe it in your heart, to accept it as if it's real and true. To not play games wondering, am I good enough for God today? Does he love me today? I just messed up. Is he still going to love me? That you won't even ask those questions because you'll know. You'll just know. Because every time you get to the end of the length of his love, you realize, oh my word, the boundary keeps going. And every time you climb high to the top of his love, you go, am I hitting the ceiling yet? And you look up and it keeps going endlessly. And you dive down deep into whatever you're doing. You're digging a hole to China, trying to find the depth of the love, the boundary where it stops. And you get down to the bottom. You're like, it still is going deeper. Paul wants you to know how much he loves you. And I love the expression he says. Did you see it in chapter 3, verse 18? Or excuse me, verse 17. It says, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. And he says, and you being what? Rooted and grounded in love. Do you know most of the dumb stuff you do is because you're trying to get somebody to love you? Like the dumbest, stupidest things you do are because you aren't stable enough to realize, I don't need to prove anything. I don't need anything. I have love already. I am already a loved person. And when you allow the love of Christ to root you and ground you, all of a sudden you're solid, you're stable. The storms of life come to you and you're like, you know what? This is hard, but I'm loved. You know what? This is tough and I feel like I want to give up, but I'm not going to give up because I'm loved in the middle of this storm and I have an anchor I can hold to when winds of life are blowing me all over the place. Because that's how much Jesus loves me. He loves me that much. I'm solid, I'm rooted, I'm secure. Yes, I struggle. Yes, I'm scared. Yes, it hurts. But I'm here and nothing is going to move me. And then, here's what I absolutely love about this passage. I didn't read it on purpose. I did a preacher trick and I'm sorry. Verse 19 says this, to know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge. And what's the goal of knowing the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge? It says here, this really weird phrase, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God. I want you to picture an empty cup. And this empty cup represents our craving for love. And what Jesus wants to do is he wants to take that empty cup that we've been putting in little dips and drabs and little tiny little bits of love from this person and this person and this parent and this sibling and this boyfriend and this friend. And we've been trying really hard to fill up our cup and we find that it keeps leaking out the bottom because we're broken and our hearts can't hold on to love for very long. And so what Jesus wants to do is not just fill up your cup with water. He wants to set one of those spouts of water over the cup of your heart. And he's going to turn it all the way up until the God setting. The God setting. The overpowering flow of water that would knock you off your feet. It's that powerful. And he wants to put that faucet over this empty cup. And who cares if it leaks out the bottom? There's more coming from the top all the time. Your cup is never empty because it's flowing from the source that never runs out of water. Do you understand what I'm saying? No, it doesn't fix you, everything about you. You have broken pieces and you still hurt and you still feel love escaping. But his love is so overwhelming, you keep getting filled up every single day. Just like you need new life, just like you need new wisdom, just like you need all the things he has to offer you. He wants to be the satisfaction of your deepest cravings. And not just in a religious-y, blah, 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 churchy kind of way. He wants to be there when you're on your knees and broken, pouring his love into you until you're like, you know what? God has satisfied me. He's filled me up. And even though it's going to leak out, it's going to keep pouring on me endlessly, not just for this life, but on into eternity. That's the promise, guys. That's the claim. And I know it's crazy, okay? I know it's radical. I know it's controversial. I know you may not believe it. I know it may feel just too good to be true. But in the end, friend, that's what you've got to decide. You're free to disagree. You're free to chase any treasure you want. But I'll tell you this, you will chase something. You will chase something. So my thought here as we close is this. What if it's all true? Like, what if what I'm saying is true to you? What if there's one person you could turn to, and his name is Jesus, and if you turn to him for real, you could find all the treasure that you'll ever need? What if tapping into his rest, his life, his wisdom, his love would actually result in a life that is filled to overflowing with all of the resources that God has to provide? If that's true, Jesus has a very simple instruction for you today, and I just want to pass it along to you for you to think about. He says, come to me. Come to me. Why do we complicate that? Why do we make it this thing that, like, I got to figure out life first? Well, I got to get all my act together, and then I'll show up. Then I'll come. Jesus just says, come. Just come. I don't know what to say. Jesus doesn't say, come with words. He says, come. Come to me. Come to me. I have a 2-year-old at home. That's what the bags under the eyes are. And sometimes he doesn't even know what he needs. He just comes to daddy. And we figure it out. My wife is an incredible translator. You may not even know which of these 4 things you need the most right now. You just know you need something. Can I just tell you? Just come to Jesus just how you are. Just all broken and beat up and bruised. Who cares? Don't know what to say? Who cares? Don't know what to do next? Who cares? Just show up. Just come to him the way you are right now. Let him help you figure out what's next. And if we can help, boy, we want to. Boy, we want to. Let's pray. God,